This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, showdown in the Senate, rules change, paving the way for confirmation of Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell invokes the so-called nuclear option. Not a nuclear option in the literal sense, but last week, Senate Democrats mustered more than 41 senators needed to filibuster, that is, an effort by minority lawmakers to delay or block the Senate from voting on a bill or oppose a nomination. However, this historic change in its voting rules has Republicans and Democrats alike warning of perils that could alter the chamber by using their majority to change Senate rules and eliminate the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. Republicans would erode minority party rights in the chamber. Well, with us to discuss what's at stake with this move and many other domestic issues dominating the U.S. political landscape, such as the failed effort by Republicans to repeal and replace Obamacare, President Donald Trump's threats to the so-called Freedom Caucus, his rollback of former President Obama's climate rules, and more, are two veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and that's a centrist policy group based in Washington. He's also a regular contributor for Politico newspaper. And Nathan Gonzalez. He's the editor and publisher of Inside Elections. That's a nonpartisan letter providing analysis on presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial elections. Previously, Nathan worked with the Rothenberg Political Report. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Well, John Fortier, let me begin with you. Some rather dramatic news on the domestic political front, particularly with respect to the Senate and the rules change. Talk about the implications of this rules change and how it will affect the workings of the Senate and even its impact on the judiciary.
Well, the course to this rules change or so-called nuclear option has been set for a while. In fact, I think both parties can look back and worry that the other party has been ratcheting up their scrutiny of judicial nominations for a long time. I think Republicans will go back to Judge Bork in the Reagan years where Democrats had voted him down. And I think progressively, Congress after Congress, we've gotten a more partisan scrutiny of judicial nominations. A few years ago, Democrats in charge worried that Republicans had blocked some of their lower court nominees and exercise this same sort of rules change. It is a big move. It means essentially that there will be no filibuster going forward on either Supreme Court nominees or lower nominees or cabinet members. It will be a straight 51% vote for the majority to get their nominees. And it means that the Senate has progressed along becoming a sort of more partisan body in these ways. Ultimately, I think the filibuster still does exist in many parts of the legislative realm. One wonders if down the road that will be under threat. But for now, that is still the rule. The Senate is a consensus, more consensus body in some areas of legislation, but not anymore on the judicial and nominations front.
Turning to you, Nathan Gonzalez, to add or subtract to what John Fortier said, a very interesting and informative explanation of the impact of this so-called nuclear option and how it could change the Senate, which is a more deliberative body, in contrast to the House. It sort of makes it more like the House of Representatives. Talk about the implications of this move and its impact on the Senate and the judiciary.
I think this was inevitable. It was going to happen at some point. It was just a matter of when and not if. But if there was going to be a time where it could be avoided, it initially looked like this would be the time, because when you look at the politics and the political situation of some of these senators, you have 10 Democratic senators up for re-election in 2018 that are running in states that Donald Trump won in 2016. And so there's this political pressure about, do they support the president because their states supported Donald Trump, or do they go with the Democratic Party? And in the end, not enough of those Democrats were willing to support Gorsuch. Republicans have to go through with this. And I think Republican leadership is weighing whether or not it's worth it, right? Is it worth it? And for a lifetime Supreme Court nominee, I think they made the calculation that this is the time to do it, particularly when they're having trouble getting other things done, healthcare, taxes. At least they can go to the Republican voters. We got this done. We got Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court.
Nathan is right to point to some of this political background where there were certainly some that said Donald Trump won in a different way and won some states by large margins. And would that put pressure on Democrats? We've seen it be mixed, right? He got, of the five very strong Trump states, three of these senators went with the Republicans on this Gorsuch nomination, and a handful have been on some other things. So I think a little bit of bleed over for Democrats to support Republicans because of Trump, but not as much as maybe they'd hoped.
Well, speaking of the politics, John Fortier, many political analysts argue that opposing Judge Gorsuch in this way, forcing Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, to change the threshold of votes needed to confirm him to the Supreme Court, only hurts Democrats in the long run. It might score them some political points in the short run, but they certainly are rightly resentful, one could argue, over the obstruction of Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Merrick Garland. He wasn't even given a hearing. But by opposing Gorsuch, who is, many argue, clearly qualified, even the former Solicitor General for President Obama endorsed him, that they, again, are hurting themselves. That is, the Democrats are hurting themselves in the long run.
Well, look, I guess I would have liked to have seen us maintain some of the filibuster in these areas, but I agree with Nathan that this was something that was coming. And the reason it's coming is because both parties' political bases are happy with this result, right? As much as we rile up a lot of people, the Republicans would be unhappy with their people defecting and not voting with Gorsuch. And most Democrats, except for these small handful, perhaps in very strong Trump states, are going to go home and hear their voters saying, good job, keep obstructing these judges and other things of the Trump administration we don't want. So I don't think that there's a lot of political price for Democrats to pay. It was going to happen whether it was this nomination or the next nomination. So as much as I think it served a good function in the past, I think it was something that we could see coming.
Once again, inevitable, Nathan Gonzalez.
Inevitable, and I think Democrats could benefit in the future when they're back in the Senate majority and they have a Democratic president and they have an opportunity to replace a Supreme Court justice. So I think Democrats could benefit, but that's where Republicans, if you're going to change the rules, you have to be able to live by those rules when you're in the minority and not just when you're in the majority.
Back to you, John Fortier. Moving on now to health care. It seems like a distant memory, but it wasn't long ago when the Republican-controlled Congress tried to repeal and replace Obamacare, but they failed. And then President Trump excoriated the so-called Freedom Caucus for having killed the legislation. Definition, Freedom Caucus. And again, what happened?
Well, I think we could look back to Donald Trump. Certainly, he came in as a controversial president, and by most measures, his job approval numbers weren't as high as incoming presidents. But really, until 3 weeks ago, when we started talking about serious repeal and replace of Obamacare, his numbers were at least pretty solid in his base. He was sort of 45% of the country at least was with him, even though many were against him. You've seen this failure, at least a temporary failure, of the party to come together and unite around healthcare reform has brought the president's numbers down significantly. It's maybe a temporary phenomenon. Really, we're telescoping everything. And now we have rumors that things are back on the table, that there's a possibility even before Congress goes into recess that we might have at least the beginnings of a deal that might get through the House of Representatives. I think at the end of the day, Donald Trump has stepped into the messiness of politics within his caucus. He does have some interesting support electorally that other Republican presidents didn't have. I think he's actually much more hands-on in working with Congress and in bringing people in. That's something that maybe President Obama didn't do enough. But he does not have consensus, and that lack of consensus is really bleeding out to the country to say either he's business as usual or he's not getting things done as quickly as they would like.
Well, Nathan Gonzalez, how do you see the defeat of this, at least temporary, the repeal and replace of Obamacare? And now, suddenly, another health care proposal is being weighed by the Republican Party. And the Freedom Caucus, we need to define who they are, why they obstructed the initial legislation to begin with, and what is being done to bring them on board, because we also heard President Trump threaten them, say that, you know, if you don't get on board, I mean, what's going on here within the Republican Party?
So the House Freedom caucus, they're labeled as the most conservative element of the House Republicans on the Hill. I think it's more strategy than ideology in a lot of ways, that they are about not compromising and standing up for what they believe are principles of the conservative ideology. And that creates problems when you're trying to get 218 votes for something where everyone has a different view. I think the health care is a good example of the ongoing civil war in the Republican Party. And that's been going on for 8 years. And even though they won the White House, they have control of Congress. That doesn't mean everyone agrees on what to do. The only agreement is on getting rid of the Affordable Care Act. The alternative is where the problem lies. And President Trump has turned his anger toward the House Freedom Caucus. They weren't the only ones who opposed it. There were some more moderate members that opposed the bill as well. Because when you look at the polling, I'm not sure that people realize exactly what's in it, but what they've heard of it, they don't like it. And so that made members in more competitive districts nervous about everything. So then we're talking about, is the White House going to support primary challengers to House Freedom Caucus members? And I think we're a long way from what the president tweets to a credible primary challenge, but, you know, the president's a wild card. You don't know exactly where he's going to focus his attention at any given moment. And the last point on, there was talk about, because the House Freedom Caucus doesn't appear to be on board, what about getting centrist Democrats? And I was skeptical that leader Nancy Pelosi would allow enough of her caucus to work with Republicans to get something done. But when I was on the Hill last week talking to some of those, I would say, few centrist Democrats, I was surprised. I think they're actually open to what the president and what Republicans put on the table. The devil's going to be in the details, but I don't think the leader, she's done a good job of keeping her conference together, but I'm not sure that they are looking to her to get all of their cues. I think there could be an opportunity to get something done.
And I guess I would just say that Donald Trump, in some ways, people will associate him with the Freedom Caucus loosely in the sense that he's a brash outsider, somebody who's willing to break the China. And it's not as if he doesn't have people in his administration and some instincts that are similar to theirs. And his budget director, Mick Mulvaney, is somebody who comes more from that school of thought. But he does have some positions, especially on infrastructure and spending, which, while the Freedom Caucus, I think, is true, it's generally more about tactics. They are worried about spending and worried about big government probably more than the average Republican. And, you know, that's a natural tension, which I think the president has interestingly tried to, you know, reach out, but is finding that there are differences between him and the Freedom Caucus.
And I think fundamentally the president wants to get things done. He wants to deliver on promises. That's why he's working so fast on some of these things. And that frustrates the House Freedom Caucus or some Republicans, because he's willing to make a deal. He can be squishy. I don't know that he has a firm ideology. I think he wants to compromise, get it done, and get out to rallies and tell people about it.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, he's political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Nathan Gonzalez, from whom you just heard. He's the editor and publisher of Inside Elections. That's a nonpartisan newsletter providing analysis on presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial elections. And we are discussing the latest issues dominating the U.S. political landscape. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Omarson Duamena. He's a fan from St. Petersburg, Russia. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Speaking of Russia, a good segue, right, John Fortier? Russia probe. We just found out last week that Devin Nunes, the head of the House Intelligence Committee, is going to step aside temporarily from this probe. We have a Senate Intelligence Committee investigating the potential ties between Mr. Trump and his campaign and members of perhaps his cabinet and Russia. We have an FBI investigation going on. To what extent is all of this sort of undermining the ability of President Trump to really go forward, whether it's on health care, tax reform, and other issues that he is championing?
Well, it certainly is a distraction that the administration would not want to have. I guess I will put it this way. The Democratic line and position during the campaign had been worries about coziness with Russia on the Trump campaign, perhaps some coziness policy-wise. And, of course, we do have evidence that Russia itself was trying to affect public opinion, being willing to hack and release emails that were damaging to the Democratic side. There also are at least some evidence of what charges have been made of some of the Trump people previous from the campaign and some that came with him that have at least business ties, if not some other ties to Russia. I think the story that Democrats would like to tell, and maybe the investigation will lead there, is that there was great collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. We have not seen that. So that's something that a line that the Democrats, many of them believe or worry about, and Republicans are pushing back on. Add to that, we have some countercharges, really, that the Republican Trump administration is making, that some of the Obama national security officials were loose with, trying to at least indirectly unmask or show some of the Trump connections to the Russians. All of this with many investigations on the Hill, with different parts of the Hill investigating. There's certainly a call from the Democratic side for a purely independent investigation. There are also some calls for more of a united select committee investigation, which would combine all the committees. I don't see that happening at this point, but I do think, you know, there will be investigations going forward on the Hill. Things will come out. Some of them may be damaging the administration. If they were the most damaging stories, the one the Democrats believe, that would be extremely damaging the administration. Or it may be just a stone hanging around the administration, making it more difficult for them to focus on the things they want to.
Whatever results from these investigations, these many investigations, Nathan Gonzalez, it can't be positive for Mr. Trump, who wants to get down to business, so to speak. But nonetheless, this is very serious. We have unanimous consensus by U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia interfered in the U.S. election, continues to do so, will do so in the future, and we need to get to the bottom of this. It's an attack on U.S. democracy. So how do you see this going forward? Calls for independent investigations by both Democrats and some Republicans. Nonetheless, we have ongoing investigations. How much does this distract from Mr. Trump's agenda?
I think where you stand on this issue kind of depends on where you live and where you sit, meaning there is some bipartisan call for further investigations here in Washington. But I think when you go out to other parts of the country outside of Beltway, I think Donald Trump's supporters think there's nothing here. And I'm not even sure what it would take for them to believe that there's fire instead of just smoke, because I think this comes down to a credibility issue, that if the intelligence community or the government or politicians say something about President Trump or the Trump campaign, then his supporters say, well, I don't have any trust or faith that that's actually true. And so I think it would have to take some sort of major legal indictment or something that would cause some of his supporters to reconsider it. And beyond that, I think it's a partisan issue, meaning that Democrats are fired up about it and they want to get to the bottom of it. They're using it for fundraising purposes. But electorally, I don't know that it's going to make a huge difference, except for unless there's something else bigger that comes.
All right. And we need to be clear. We're waiting for that. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence, and that is exactly what the FBI and the Senate and House Intelligence Committees are looking into. So we're just in the middle of it. But I think you all agree that it is a bit of a distraction, and it's going to be that way for some time until
There's also you know, a potential connection, or some have made a connection to Russia policy, Trump policy towards Russia, which, you know, he certainly on the campaign trail had opened doors to the possibility of finding pragmatic, specific instances of working with Russia. I think one of them he might have hoped is in helping solve the problems in Syria. But since then, I think if you look, many of the people he's put in place and many of the positions the administration have taken have been traditional positions of the Republican Party, and have been, you know, somewhat more critical of Russia. So it's not absolutely clear that if he wanted to go that way, that it's working out that way, and that many of the people in positions are now more traditional people who are skeptical of Russia.
I think where the issue could escalate, if we look down the road quite a ways, is that if Democrats take the House back in 2018 and gain control of these committees and gain control of the investigations, then I think you see it ratcheted up to another level. What does that produce? Do they go too far? Is there a backlash against that? There are a lot of different scenarios there, but I could see, you know, Democrats could have significant gains in the House in 2018. If they get the majority, then it's a new ballgame on investigations.
All right. Let's turn now to the fact that Mr. Trump has loosened climate rules that President Obama imposed. We recall that President Obama wanted to not in any way necessarily hurt the coal industry, but move forward on clean energy. And for that, many regulations were put in place. But now Mr. Trump has rolled them back, saying that he's going to bring the coal miners' jobs back. Do you think that is the case, John Fortier?
Well, I think Donald Trump is not taking a position that different from really any Republican president would have come into play. First of all, some of these regulations were at the end of the Obama administration. The goal of the president and the Congress is to sort of stop and roll back the last minute things as much as they can. Donald Trump too, in addition to traditional Republican positions, ran very specifically in parts of the country to say, you know, we care about manufacturing jobs, we care about coal jobs, we care about other sort of more blue-collar industries that many of his voters turn to him on. So I think, you know, it'd be hard to imagine President Trump going far back on these things. Is the same sort of job structure going to be there in the future? Is this all going to change things? Not necessarily, but I do think the Trump administration is trying to send signals with his, you know, one-on-one negotiation with companies about factories, with trade, with immigration, and with these sort of issues on energy-related issues that he is with the people who came with him in this election. There are occasional signals in the other direction. We have factions within the White House. Certainly the Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump faction sometimes has pushed him to be a little, you know, he's not pulled out of climate agreements. He might be more circumspect in some ways, but I think the thrust of his presidency is going to be reminded of those voters who were with him that helped him win through the Midwest and win that election.
Well, Nathan Gonzalez, you have your finger on the pulse of many people in the country, perhaps even where coal miners are living. Now, President Trump said he would champion policies that would bring back mining jobs, but many in that very industry say these jobs are not coming back because other sources of energy are replacing them because of automation. So it's not a question of we're going to bring them back by, you know, a stroke of a pen, that there are structural problems, structural impediments to bringing such jobs back. What are you hearing in the field?
Well, I think that the president is probably going to do a couple of different things. One, maybe find a small anecdotal way that he has helped the industry and harp on that point. Or if nothing happens, then he'll find someone to blame. It'll be Democrats, it'll be environmentalists, it'll be whomever else. And his supporters will tend to believe that. You know, there's a difference between reality and what people think is reality, and that's how people think about the economy and where their jobs are going or whether they're coming back. How they think about it is almost more important than what's actually happening.
And of course, that speaks to the importance of getting the facts out, so that people, you know, aren't perhaps reading something and believing something that isn't substantiated. And we're all subject to that with Facebook and all kinds of platforms that push out news. We need to be able to distinguish fact from fiction. And people in the public sphere need to explain why they're for or against a particular policy. Well, as we close, John Fortier, we are coming up on a deadline, April 28th, a potential showdown, a potential government shutdown. What's at stake?
Well, we've seen this movie before. We were seeing it especially in the Obama administration when we had divided government. We are borrowing money, and we also have we're running our government on a continuing resolution. And so ultimately, we come up to deadlines where we have to continue to fund our government, or we get to the debt ceiling, another issue, which often led to these sort of clashes. We've seen that, you know, very strongly between the parties in the last 6 years. But now we're going to see if the Trump administration can get something through which will avoid this crisis. I mean, it means working with Democrats because, again, you do have in the Senate a 60-vote requirement for Republicans to do anything. So I think we may well see what we often see is going up to the deadline and having another bump down the road of a few more days. But ultimately, Republicans in charge do not want to see a government shutdown. And many of their members of the Freedom Caucus and others are going to not want to give what is needed to Democrats to get there. So it's a difficult problem. I think we will ultimately solve it, but I can't say I think we will solve it in a clean way, even though the dealing is going on and Republicans know they have to deal with Democrats to some extent on this.
Well, you get the last word, Nathan Gonzalez, on what's at stake. We have to pass a budget by April 28th in order to avoid a government shutdown. And let's be clear, this is not the budget that Mr. Trump proposed, which is also very controversial down the line, many cuts to the State Department and other agencies. But this is just a budget to keep the government functioning, correct, until October.
Right. And the time where we've seen the two parties work together in the past is when both sides feel like there is a crisis, or if something isn't done, then the whole country is going to go over the edge. But what we learned 3 years ago in the last government shutdown was that, 3.5 years ago, was that both parties didn't even agree whether a crisis existed. And that threw a whole wrench into whether people are going to work together or not. So I agree with John. I think we're going to get there at some point, but we might have a few days of a shutdown again, and then it's going to be lots of blame and finger pointing, and we keep going around in the same circle.
Well,
How's that for optimism?
On that point of agreement between both of you, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Nathan Gonzalez. He's editor and publisher of Inside Elections. Thank you both, gentlemen, for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Jonah Cummings. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.